Hello, it's 2 o'clock, and this is Barbara Ridenour with the Decatur Herald and Review, dated September 18th, 2015. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with "Fill Her Up, Motorists Enjoy Cheaper Prices at the Pump." Dora Banks kept her eye on the price gauge as she filled up her new car with gas for the first time Thursday. She was relieved when it came to $28 for nearly 15 gallons. She plans on keeping it full as long as gas prices are good, as the $1.91 she bought it for at the Shell station on Pershing Road and North Main Street. "It's cheap," she said. Decatur drivers have been saving at the pump lately, with prices dropping below $2 a gallon for regular gas, following a downward trend since Labor Day weekend. The state average for regular gas was $2.43 a gallon Thursday, but in Decatur, every station sold for less than $2. Traffic at the Shell station just north of downtown has been a little higher than usual. Fred Hill stopped by to put in $10 to get him by for the next few days. "You don't make money like you used to. Every little bit helps," Hill said. Shell manager Jasmine Jones said that the store has been making more money between gas and retail sales. "Everyone's scared it's going to go up, so they keep topping off," Jones said. She added that while most customers are happy prices are low, they don't know why. "I don't think they care how it's low, just as long as it's low," she said. Gas station owner John Phillips said Decatur's gas market is an especially good lesson in the economics of supply and demand. "Oil is much cheaper nationwide than recent years because of an abundant production and supplies of crude oil in the United States and abroad. That is multiplied in Decatur, where there are a lot of gas stations and not enough drivers." Phillips pointed to the more regulated gas markets in Springfield and Champaign, where prices were 10 cents to 20 cents higher. "There is an overcapacity in Decatur, a shrinking town, smaller population, and way too much gas," said Phillips, who owns University Service, a BP station near Millikan University. While retailers buying finished gas at $2 a gallon, With retailers buying finished gas at $2 a gallon, most are losing money by dropping prices. It's even worse for neighborhood gas stations competing for customers, such as the Casey's General Store and Huck's along Illinois 121 in Mount Zion, which both sold gas for $1.89 Thursday. Still, Phillips expected prices to stay low for the near term. "Anything could happen to give it a blip. But gas is going to go down another 30, 40 cents because there's too much," he said. "Gas prices tend to drop after Labor Day, which marks the end of the summer driving season. Low gas prices over the summer led to Americans driving more than $1.54 trillion miles in the first half of 2015, according to the Federal Highway Administration. Prices spiked regionally in July when an oil refinery in Indiana shut down due to unexpected repairs. But Phillips said in the part of town where his station is located, people are oblivious to price since they are only buying a few dollars of gas at a time. Most people say, "How much money do I have in my pocket?" and "How much can I put in my tank?" he said. University Commons shapes Millikan future. Millikan University gave a glimpse Thursday of how its past will form its future in the shape of a 5-level university commons to rise up around the Staley Library starting in February. Designed to combine library and student center functions and more, the $27 million project unveiled in architects' renderings will be one of the largest in campus history and open by the start of the 2017-18 academic year. President Patrick White said the university's emphasis on performance learning is simply a new way of expressing founder James Millikan's vision more than a century ago, which was to provide practical learning alongside the literary and classical to better prepare students for success in the real world. "Everyone involved has to be committed to making this an action space, not just taking what we've done before and stacking it up," White said. The 87,000 square foot structure, which will completely remodel the 1976 library building while adding to it, will be second only to Schilling Hall as the largest building on campus, and will house a new Oberhelman Center for Leadership Performance at entry level, which will consolidate leadership programs at Millikan, including a leadership academy in the Tabor School of Business, a major in the organizational leadership under the College of Arts and Sciences, and a leadership track under Student Life. It will also take on functions currently handled by Richards Treat University Center, such as student dining services, to be housed in the basement, and on the third floor, space for town and gown events, WJMU radio, and student development. Rafaela Prang, Dean of Student Development, said, "Transparency and flexibility are important features of the design by Hastings and Chivetta Architects of St. Louis." As you walk in the front door, it will be very clear all the functions of the building and all the places you can go to perform and learn and gather together, Prang said. There will be lots of informal spaces that flank some of these very purposeful areas. It will be a place to be seen and to see others, one that will bring everyone on campus home to a living room space, so to speak. After a groundbreaking set for November 6th, library functions will move over the holiday break into one of the former New Hall residence facilities northeast of the Decatur Indoor Sports Center, and much of the collection will go into storage off campus until it can be moved into University Commons, most of it onto compact shelving planned for the second floor. "For 18 months or so, our students won't be able to wander our stacks," White said. "They'll have to come and request what they want, and it will be delivered in a day. Also, 30 of the 81 parking spaces in front of Staley Library, situated between Perkinson Music Center and Schilling Hall, will go away permanently as the front of the University Commons moves south to where the parking lot now begins, and then a plaza is added in front of that. As we're looking at athletic planning and other planning for the future, we're going to be taking into consideration our need for parking," White said. The Center for International Education will also move from Schilling Hall to University Commons. Once the project is complete, the university may look to Richard Street to provide additional space for Millikan's theater and dance program. Major support for University Commons was provided by the Caterpillar Foundation and Caterpillar Incorporated, Chairman and CEO Doug Oberhelman, a 1975 graduate, and his wife Diane. Other large gifts came from other Millikan alumni, including Debbie Breeding Johnston and her husband Bob, the late Robert Moorhead and his wife Charlotte Beasley Moorhead, and David J. Rathje and his wife Debbie. Millikan also secured an $8 million bond to provide additional funding. Dave Brandon, Vice President for Alumni and Development, said plans for the University Commons have inspired much of the giving to transform MU, a campaign launched in May 2010 with a goal of raising $85 million. The campaign has raised $93.5 million to date, with less than 4 months to go before wrapping up December 31st. And the $10 million target for new and existing endowed scholarships has been surpassed by $9 million. Fundraising continues to raise the additional $5 million needed for the $15.5 million Center for Theater and Dance, and for $2 million needed to complete renovations to Millikan's new Exercise Science and Sports Pavilion, among other initiatives. Upgrades to Frank M. Lindsay Field, including a $1.75 million artificial playing surface, were completed 1 year ago. White said student dining services at University Commons will feature two pods, one with a stage door theme and the other with a sports grill theme. "At night, there will be a lot of people eating there," the president said. "At night, there will be a performance in one space, a meeting of an athletic team in the other, and a chance for them to interact with one another." "One thing the University Commons will not be," officials said, "is a place to play. Nobody is asking, where's the pool table? This is going to be a serious place without being solemn, he said. Decatur PE teacher forged for Iron Man. The Iron Man course is a real test of endurance. It's a 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bike ride, and a 26.2-mile run. It's an all-day event, said Chris Allen, a Decatur physical education teacher who just finished his second Ironman on September 13th in Madison, Wisconsin. Entrants get 17 hours to complete the event, beginning at 7 a.m. Allen's time wasn't as fast as he'd hoped, and he hasn't checked his exact time, but it was about 11 hours, he said. It's taken a lot of time and a lot of preparation, he said. I used to play college soccer, and due to injury, I got into swimming and biking. It's kind of been a natural progression. Since being done with soccer, it's been my niche. Allen said his triathlon in 2009 at the Rodney T. Miller Lakeside Triathlon in Decatur, did his first triathlon there. 2 years ago, he completed a half Ironman. He's a graduate of Eisenhower High School in Greenville College, where he majored in physical education and holds a master's in kinesiology from Southern Illinois University at Edwardsville. He graduated without being sure he wanted to teach, so he worked at Shields and as a personal trainer, but he kept feeling a pull toward teaching. Last spring, the position in the Decatur School District opened up and he was hired. I haven't regretted it for a moment, he said. My faith is a big part of my life, and I think it was God's plan. He coaches soccer at Eisenhower in addition to teaching PE at Enterprise and South Shore schools, where his philosophy is to keep the kids moving the whole time he's with them. He's creative in finding ways to do that, and on a recent day he provided hula hoops as part of the lesson. His wife Ashley and his parents and brother accompanied him to the Ironman to cheer him on, and that makes a lot of difference, he said. Having people encouraging him from the sidelines keeps him going. With that kind of physical effort, he also has to know enough about nutrition and his own body's needs to keep himself fueled as well. Several other Decatur area educators are triathletes, too. Jill Reedy, assistant regional superintendent of schools, got started after watching her husband, Brett, compete, while he was in turn inspired by fellow MacArthur High School teacher Beth McClure. South Shore students pack care bags for OASIS clients. Clients of OASIS Daycare Center will be a little better supplied thanks to the fifth grade at South Shore School. As a project-based learning assignment, students researched what homeless people might need for a sort of emergency kit to carry with them, thanks to donations of those items. The students packed gallon plastic bags and handed them over Wednesday to Todd Tuggle, director of OASIS Daycare, for distribution. At least 20 people out there will have something at the end of the day that they didn't have at the beginning. He has visited the class before. Tuggle told the students. He has visited the class before to explain to them what the OASIS clients face as they try to survive without a home of their own. One thing he emphasized is that it's important to them that someone knows their name and uses it. Just because they have no home doesn't mean they're bad or criminal or they've been in jail, Tuggle said. Some of them have just had tough breaks. Don't judge anybody because you have no idea where they've been or the struggles they've been through. Though no one can help anyone, he said, making a difference in one person's life is important. He told them the starfish story to illustrate. A man was walking along the beach where large numbers of starfish have washed up onto the sand. He bends to pick up one after another, tossing them into the water. Another man comes along and tells him he's never going to be able to save them all. So why bother? The first man says, I made a difference for that one, as he tosses another one back into the sea. It's important to make one person happy, said Lucas Hood, 10. A little bit goes a long way. The students wanted to do what they could to help, he said, and to make sure that OASIS clients had shampoo and soap and razor so they could keep clean and feel better. Students made lists of things the clients might need, and on Tuesday packed the bags, which are convenient size for carrying without being too heavy. One child asked Tuggle on Wednesday what would happen to the clients who didn't get a bag, because there were only 20 bags and Oasis has more than 20 clients. Tuggle assured him that Oasis would see to their needs. As part of the project, said instructional coach Debbie Roberts, the students wrote about what they learned in the process of meeting Tuggle and learning about homelessness. She had only begun reading essays Wednesday, but said that she was pleased with the students' thoughts and care. The kids also made cards for each bag with messages such as, "We care about you," and Tuggle said those were possibly the most important item in the bags. "We were thinking about people," said Michaela Simmons, 10. "I wrote a poem." Library presents two budgets for City. If it was a tale of two budgets for the Decatur Public, it was a tale of two budgets for the Decatur Public Library on Thursday. Uncertain of the library building's future in the midst of ongoing talks, the library board voted to send a pair of 2016 spending plans to Decatur City staff for consideration. The budgets are about $500,000 apart and envision either a scenario in which the Decatur Public Building Commission owns the library or one in which nothing changes. "It'll start a conversation, we hope," City Librarian Rick Meyer said. "Obviously, we can't adopt two budgets. In the end, one or something completely different has to be adopted. But city officials want a budget in their office by tomorrow, so this was our last opportunity." Meyer presented board members with detailed justifications for each budget, explaining that what changes were expected in various line items. The library board earlier this year approved a plan to sell its facility at 130 North Franklin Street to the Building Commission. However, the Decatur City Council asked City Manager Tim Gleason early in August to explore other options, with several members questioning whether the deal was a good one for the city. Library board and city representatives have met twice since then. No specific direction has emerged. In the meantime, the maintenance needs that spurred development of the original proposal persist. The parking lot must be resurfaced, and the HVAC control system and annex building roof need to be replaced, library officials said. If the library continues to own the building, the board would ask the council for an additional $500,000 to make those improvements. That budget contains total expenses of $4.1 million. If the Building Commission purchased the library facility as planned, expenses are estimated at $3.6 million. Both budget scenarios also include a cost increase of about $180,000 to pay for 2% raises for both management personnel and the former required by contract, and for the addition of a full-time librarian position that would allow the library to extend its weekly operating hours by 4. That means the library will be open from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday through Thursday. Officials from the library, Building Commission, and Macon County negotiated for more than a year to craft the original space-sharing plan. Under it, the library would rent space from the commission, which would assume maintenance costs. Macon County offices would move into unused space, and a private developer planned to turn the county's office building at 141 South Main into residential space. But council members were concerned, citing about $735,000 in outstanding debt from bonds issued in 1998 to pay for library renovations. The library is also valued as a $4.1 million asset on city financial statements, even though the library board holds the deed. "The clock is running out," said Mark Sorensen, the board's vice president. "In the spirit of cooperation, we're presenting two budgets to them, and I'm assuming Mr. Gleason, following a city council request, would call us up and say, 'Let's meet and discuss this.'" Greg Ziantara, a library board member since July, is also the city's finance director. He said city staff have discussed the library's capital needs internally. Our discussion has been something has to happen in the first quarter of 2016, he said. But Zientara said it's not his place to present the city's plan to the library board. There is a discussion ongoing, but it obviously, Gleason, is not ready to come to talk to you. But there's a discussion ongoing, he said. During public comments, the board heard a longtime library user and former employee who still volunteers in the children's department during the summer. Deanne Davis questioned why the city claimed the building as an asset when it does not hold the deed. Speaking after the meeting, she said she thought the deal with the county and the building commission was a better one for all parties. Why didn't the city speak up sooner if they were interested, she said. They've always claimed this building when it was convenient for them, she said. City Council appoints Chris Funk to vacancy. The Decatur City Council is expected to appoint Chris Funk as its seventh member Monday. Funk, 35, is Senior Vice President and Chief Credit Officer for Hickory Point Bank and Trust. He would take the spot formerly held by Julie Moore Wolfe until she was appointed mayor August 17th to the vacancy created by Mike McElroy's death 1 month earlier. He has phenomenal financial experience, Moore Wolfe said of Funk. He's really committed to Decatur and he's young. Not that the rest of us are that old, but I really look to him to be part of the next generation of leaders in this community. City Councilman Jerry Dawson said he approached Funk about applying for the position, having gotten to know him when they served together on the Community Investment Corporation of Decatur, CICD board. I was really impressed with him because he brought so much to the table, Dawson said, praising Funk's financial skills. He has the attitude of, quote, if I'm going to be on this board, I'm going to bring what I can bring, end quote. And he did. In addition, Funk has served on boards for the Kiwanis Club, Girl Scouts of Central Illinois, and is a current member of the Boards for Macon Resources and Decatur Christian School. Funk said he is serving on the council as another opportunity to give back. I think the Decatur City Limitless concept and the substantial investments that have been made in this community are the right direction for the community, and I want to see us continue that vision, he said. He earned a bachelor's degree from the University of Illinois in 2002, graduating with high honors, and began working at Hickory Point the same year. Funk is also expected to graduate from the ABA Stonier Graduate School of Banking in June 2016. A native of the area, Funk attended elementary school in Mount Zion and Cerro Gordo, middle school and high schools. He and his wife, Sarah, have 4 children who are 10 years old and younger. I think there's a significant opportunity for young people to get engaged in our city and its governance and to continue the vision that's been laid out and to even take us to new and better places, he said. 20 people whose identities have not been released by the city submitted applications for the open position. Funk was one of the 4 finalists interviewed for the position Monday by 5 members of the council in a 2-hour closed session. Councilman Bill Faber was absent and said Thursday that he had notified council members he would not be able to attend because of a scheduled vacation. He had planned to be out of town, he said, but ended up not going because his wife was accepted to the Illinois Amateur Golf Tournament. Faber declined to say whether he would vote for Funk's appointment. I would say this. I have advocated a different process throughout the nominating and selection procedures. I had advocated perhaps more transparency and community involvement than my colleagues on the council saw fit to employ, he said. 4 of the 5 remaining council members said that they would support Funk's appointment. Councilwoman Dana Ray said she would vote against it because she thought G.E. Livingston would be a better choice. Livingston, president and CEO of Robertson Charter School, finished second to McElroy in the April mayoral election with 36% of the vote. Supporters have spoken at several council meetings in an effort to have him appointed, first as mayor and then to open the council spot. Ray said her support for Livingston had more to do with his qualifications than the election results. He has served on several city boards and is currently chairman of the Decatur Plan Commission. The thing that's most important to me is the fact that he is a well-rounded individual who is able to effectively reach out to all segments of the population, Ray said, adding that she would not have a problem working with Funk and thought he had good qualities too. Dawson said he was impressed with many of the applicants, but thought Funk was the most qualified to handle the challenges the council faces. We've got some real infrastructure problems, he said. I knew I needed somebody who would look at the big picture. What Chris brings to the council that we're really lacking is a true numbers guy, somebody who can really look at a budget. Councilman Pat McDaniel said he appreciated Funk's community involvement and experience with accounting, as well as the perspective he would bring as the youngest council member. Any council needs a variety of experiences and backgrounds, he said. I think all of us said that we need to appoint the best person to the council who will be able to help the community move forward, and I think Mr. Funk brings that. Councilwoman Lisa Gregory said the council was fortunate to receive many qualified applicants. She was especially impressed by Funk's strong financial background and excitement about the community and his vision for its future. I thought the process worked very well, she said. Everyone had an opportunity to present their viewpoints, so I think it was a fair and strong process, she said. Decatur welcomes Civitale sister city officials. Though she had only been in Decatur for several hours, Martina Ortson had already been won over by the friendliness and warmth she received from the locals. They're very nice, warm, and friendly since we've been here, she said. Ortson, mayor of the German city of Civitale, was just one of more than 30 officials from the city that have come to Decatur this week as part of the Sister Cities program. With her first ever trip to Decatur, Ortson said that she was looking forward to meeting with local officials to learn more about the city, how it operates, and how the two cities can help one another with business opportunities. Civitale, a city in the northern district of Harburg, just south of the city of Hamburg, is one of the two sister cities of Decatur, along with Tokorozawa, Japan. The program, established in 1975 for Civitale, allows for exchanges with city officials, students, and residents. The group from Germany will spend the next several days touring various Decatur sites such as the Midwest Inland Port, Caterpillar Incorporated, Illinois Raptor Center, and Rock Springs Conservation Area. Heather Stoa, former chairman of the Sister Cities program, said, "This is an especially memorable moment as the two cities celebrate their 40th together. It gives them a better chance to learn about what we're like here in the Midwest," she said. The group from Germany came together with local leaders Thursday night for a reception in the Decatur Civic Center. The two sides spoke fondly of the decades of partnership between the cities. Decatur Mayor Julie Moore Wolf presented Ortson with a portrait of the transfer house, while Ortson presented Moore Wolf with coffee mugs and other crafts made in the Civitale area. "We are both international cities with international business concerns," Moore Wolf said. "We're going to work over the next few years to see what we can do, both on a cultural basis and an economic development basis, to network and to get our businesses to know the Civitale businesses to see how we can work together." While the economic benefits are especially important, Dagmar Bromke, the chairwoman for the Sister Cities program for Civitale, said that the personal bond is worth the trip. "We get to take back the friendship and knowledge that there's someone across the world that we are close to and can visit," she said. Now we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated September 18th, 2015. This is Barbara Ridenour. Please stay tuned.